Think about the sheer ingenuity involved in taking something chaotic, just a jumble of different things, and precisely pulling out exactly what you need, or maybe getting rid of what you don't want.
Yeah, it's fundamental.
Whether it's the complex mix of gases in our air, or all those compounds in crude oil, or even just the grains we eat, our entire modern world really hinges on being able to separate things.
It absolutely does.
So today we're taking a deep dive into the really clever techniques that make all of this possible. And our mission for this deep dive, it isn't just about listing these methods. It's more about uncovering the subtle genius behind it all. And sometimes the huge challenges involved in separating mixtures in complex, real-world situations.
Right. It's not always straightforward.
This is your chance to really connect the dots, maybe understand some surprising trade-offs, and just appreciate the hidden science that, well, fundamentally shapes our world. We'll be recapping, emphasizing the core important topics you've explored in this area.
And it truly is a foundational science. These separation methods, they're critically important in modern society. Just think about their reach, from making sure the water you drink is safe, to transforming crude oil into basically every fuel and plastic you touch,
Wow.
and even isolating active ingredients for life-saving medicines. Understanding these methods helps us appreciate the scientific rigor behind having clean resources, pure products, and incredibly efficient processes that just underpin our daily lives.
Fascinating how fundamental it really is. And it's not exactly a new idea, is it?
Not at all. Deep roots.
We're talking about practices with a long history. Did you know, as far back as the 8th century, Arab alchemists were already refining methods like distillation
For perfumes.
for medicines?
Yeah, incredible.
Then you fast forward to the 17th century, you have scientists like Robert Boyle laying groundwork for more systematic techniques.
Building that scientific basis.
Right. And by the 19th century, we start seeing innovations like chromatography, centrifugation, and, on a massive scale, just getting salt from seawater using
Oh.
evaporation. Humans have been doing that for thousands of years.
A truly ancient practice.
It really underscores just how old and, well, persistent the need for separation truly is. So, okay, let's unpack this. Beyond the history, what really drives our need to separate things in mixtures today?
Well, it primarily boils down to, I'd say, three core imperatives.
Okay.
The first, and maybe the most immediate for daily life, is the removal of undesirable and harmful substances.
Right, makes sense.
Just imagine many of the raw food items we eat, cereals, pulses, spices, they often contain, intrinsic impurities, little stones, bits of husk, maybe even tiny insects.
Yeah.
For both health and safety, those contaminants have got to be meticulously removed before we eat them.
Absolutely.
Secondly, we separate things to obtain useful components from a mixture. Nature, well, it rarely just hands us pure substances, right? They usually come mixed together. Crude petroleum oil is a perfect example. It's this really rich soup of different hydrocarbons. Through a quite sophisticated process, fractional distillation, we can precisely separate it into distinct, really valuable products. You get petrol for cars, diesel for trucks and machinery, kerosene for heating or lamps, even waxes for, well, countless uses.
Like a master class in getting the most out of one resource.
Exactly, it is. And finally, a key driver is obtaining pure substances for specific purposes. Purity isn't just, a nice to have. For many applications, it's absolutely critical.
Like in medicine.
Precisely. In pharmaceutical production, for instance, using water of extremely high purity is non-negotiable. It prevents unwanted reactions, contamination.
Okay.
Similarly, think about car batteries. You need that precise purity to ensure they perform well and last long. Achieving this level of purity often relies heavily on methods like distillation, where even tiny impurities can have big consequences.
It's incredible when you think how those fundamental reasons just ripple out into, well, every corner of our daily lives.
Yeah.
From just washing and sieving your food at home to these huge municipal water purification systems and the massive industrial processes that guarantee the quality and safety of products we rely on every day. It really highlights how basic this science is, doesn't it?
It really does. And maybe before we dive into the actual mechanics, the how-to, it's worth just quickly revisiting what a mixture actually is.
Good idea. Let's clarify that.
Okay. So at its heart, a mixture is a substance that contains two or more different pure substances. They're physically combined, but, and this is critical, they're not chemically bonded together.
Ah, the physical versus chemical distinction.
Exactly. Think about the air we breathe. That's a mixture of gases, nitrogen, oxygen, others. Lemonade, sugar, water, lemon juice, all mixed, Even the soil under our feet is a really complex mixture of different particles, organic matter.
Okay, and that distinction, physical combination versus chemical bonding, that's really key, isn't it? Because it helps clear up some common misunderstanding.
It does.
Like the idea that all mixtures have to be liquids.
Oh yeah, that's a classic one. But mixtures can exist in any state. Solids, think trail mix, or just sand and sugar mixed together. Liquids, like we said, lemonade, milk. Or gases, like air.
Right.
And you can even have combinations like dust particles floating in the air. That's a solid in a gas.
Okay. And here's another big one I've heard. The idea that once you mix things, you can't separate them again.
Right. If only were that simple, eh?
Huh. Yeah. This deep dive would be much shorter.
But the truth is, because the components in a mixture keep their own individual properties, they're only physically jumbled together, you can almost always separate them using physical methods.
Okay.
The real skill, the art, lies in understanding the specific physical properties of the substances you're dealing with in that mixture. Things like their particle size, how well they dissolve, their density, maybe even if they're magnetic. Those properties are the levers we pull to figure out the best separation technique.
Gotcha. So let's get practical then. What's our first line of attack when we have a solid that just won't dissolve in a liquid? You know, insoluble solids. How do we separate those?
Often the simplest approach is to start with sedimentation and decantation.
Okay.
Sedimentation is just what it sounds like. You let a mixture, say sand and water, just sit undisturbed. Gravity does the work. The heavier solid particles, the sand in this case, will settle down to the bottom.
Right. They form a sediment.
Exactly. That settled solid is the sediment, and the clearer liquid sitting above it, that's the supernatant liquid.
Okay, so that's sedimentation. What about decantation?
Once the settling is done, decantation is simply the process of carefully pouring off that clear supernatant liquid into another container. The trick is to do it gently, without stirring up the sediment you left behind.
Ah, I see. Like letting muddy water settle and then pouring the clearer water off the top?
Precisely. Or even, you know, pouring broth off a stew without disturbing the meat and vegetables at the bottom. Same principle.
But what if the solid bits are really fine? Yeah. So they just sort of hang in the liquid and don't settle out easily, or they're too tiny to just pour off cleanly?
Ah, good question. That's when we need something more precise. That's where filtration comes in.
Filtration. Okay, like a coffee filter.
Exactly like a coffee filter. With filtration, you pass the mixture through a porous material filter. Filter paper is common in labs, but it could be other things too. This material has tiny holes or pores.
Mm-hmm.
The liquid part, we call it the filtrate. It can pass right through those tiny pores. But the larger insoluble solid particles, we call those the residue, they get trapped on the surface of the filter.
So it separates based on size?
Purely on particle size difference. And like you said, coffee filters are one example. But filter paper isn't the only option. You can use glass wool, charcoal, sand layers. Even the strainer you use for tea leaves in your kitchen is a type of filter.
Right. Making tea, straining juice to get rid of pulp.
Exactly. Those are all everyday examples of filtration. So if you compare them, sedimentation and decantation rely on gravity and density differences, which can be a bit rough, less precise.
Okay.
Filtration uses that physical barrier, the filter medium, based on particle size. So it generally gives you a much cleaner, more effective separation of the solid from the liquid.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, here's where it feels like the problem shifts a bit. What about when you have a mixture of different solids? No liquid to pour off or filter through here. This feels like it could get really interesting.
It does, yeah. For solid-solid mixtures, we have to look at other properties. We exploit differences in things like size, shape, density, or maybe even magnetic properties.
Okay.
The most basic method, maybe the oldest, is just hand-picking.
Literally picking things up by hand?
Literally. It involves physically picking out the bits you don't want or separating different types of things. It only works, obviously, if you can easily see the difference, different colors, shapes, sizes.
Like sorting different fruits in a bowl, or picking small stones out of rice or lentils before you cook them.
Perfect examples. Simple, effective, if a bit tedious sometimes.
I bet. What else?
Then there's threshing. This one is very specific to agriculture. It's used to separate grains, like wheat or rice, from their stalks after they've been harvested.
How's that done?
Well, traditionally, it involved beating the stalks manually, maybe with sticks, or using animals to tread on them. Mm. Nowadays, of course, on large farms, they have big machines that do this much more efficiently.
Makes sense for large scale. Okay, what's next?
Winnowing. This is another clever old technique often used by farmers. It separates lighter components like husk or chaff from heavier ones, like the grains themselves.
How does that work? Wind, right?
Exactly. You use wind or maybe create a current of blowing air. The principle is density difference. The farmer might toss the mixture into the air on a windy day. The lighter husk gets carried away by the wind, while the heavier grains fall more or less straight down or closer to the farmer. It's a really neat use of natural forces.
That is clever. Okay, what else for solids?
Then we have sieving. This one's all about particle size again. You pass the mixture through a sieve, basically a mesh or screen with holes of a specific size.
Right, like sifting flour.
Exactly like sifting flour to get lumped out. Or at a construction site, they use large sieves to separate small pebbles and stones from sand. The smaller sand particles fall through, the larger pebbles stay on top.
Simple but effective. Any others?
One more key one, magnetic separation. This method is elegantly specific. It only works if one of the components in your solid mixture is magnetic, like iron.
So you use a magnet.
You got it. You just bring a magnet close to the mixture. It attracts and pulls out the magnetic component, leaving the non-magnetic stuff behind. A classic lab demonstration is separating iron filings mixed with yellow sulfur powder. The magnet grabs the iron, leaves the sulfur.
Cool. That really shows how you target a specific property.
Absolutely. It's a great example of leveraging a unique physical characteristic.
Okay, so we've tackled insoluble solids in liquids and separating different solids from each other, but what about the tricky case? When a solid seems to just vanish into a liquid, like sugar dissolving in water, it's still there, you know it is, but dissolved, how do we get it back?
Yes, the realm of dissolved substances solutions. For these, we need different techniques again. A very common one is evaporation.
Heating it up.
Basically, yes, you add heat to the mixture. The idea is to turn the liquid part, the solvent, into a vapor or gas. This works because the liquid, like water, usually boils and turns into vapor at a much lower temperature than the dissolved solid, like salt or sugar.
So the water turns to steam and escapes.
And it leaves the solid behind. The vapor usually just dissipates into the air.
Okay. Is that used much in the real world?
Massively. The most iconic example is probably getting salt from the sea. Salt harvesting.
Right. Those big salt pans.
Exactly. Seawater is channeled into large, shallow ponds or beds. Then the sun does the work. Its heat gradually evaporates the water over time.
Leaving the salt crystals behind.
Leaving the salt crystals behind. Pure evaporation on a huge scale.
Okay. What other methods work for dissolved things or things mixed in liquids?
Well, another method, maybe more common in a kitchen context, is churning.
Like making butter.
Precisely. It's typically used in dairy to separate butterfat from cream or curd. You agitate the mixture vigorously. It works based on density differences again. The churning causes the lighter butterfat globules to clump together and separate out, floating on top.
And the liquid left is buttermilk.
That's right. The heavier buttermilk stays at the bottom. So it's separation by agitation and density difference.
Interesting. Okay, you mentioned evaporation gets rid of the liquid. What if you want to keep the liquid too?
Ah, excellent point. If you need to recover the liquid that you evaporated, you need another process. Condensation.
Condensation, like water forming on a cold glass.
Exactly like that. Condensation is the process where a gas or vapor turns back into its liquid form, usually because it gets cooled down. It's essentially the opposite of evaporation.
So steam hitting a cool surface turns back into water droplets.
Precisely. Think about boiling milk or water in a pot with a lid on. The steam rises, hits the cooler underside of the lid, and condenses back into liquid water droplets that you can see.
Okay, so how does that help separate things?
Well, condensation is often used together with evaporation in a very powerful technique called distillation.
Distillation again.
Yes. In distillation, you evaporate the liquid, then you capture that vapor and cool it down to condense it back into a pure liquid, collecting it separately. This way, you can recover both the original solid and the purified liquid.
I see. So it's a two-step process.
It is. And this combination is absolutely vital in places like oil refineries. Crude oil is distilled to separate it into petrol, diesel, kerosene, and so on. Each component boils and evaporates at a different temperature and then is condensed and collected.
Wow. Okay. That connects back to the oil example.
Definitely.
What's really fascinating here, though, is that often it seems it's not just one single trick, but maybe a whole series of them working together.
That's absolutely right.
So that raises a big question. How do these different techniques actually combine in more complex, real-world scenarios?
That's where the true art and often the engineering challenge lies. You're right. Sometimes a single method just isn't enough. You need a multi-step process, a sequence of techniques.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Let's think about a classic lab problem. Separating a mixture of common salt and sand. Both are solids.
Okay. You couldn't just see them easily if the grains are similar sizes.
Right, and magnetic separation won't work. Handpicking would be impossible. So what do? You use their different properties with water. Salt dissolves in water, sand doesn't.
Ah, solubility.
Exactly. So step one, add water to the mixture and stir. The salt dissolves, the sand doesn't. Now you have salty water with insoluble sand mixed in.
Okay, so now you can separate the sand.
Right. Step two, filter the mixture. The sand gets caught in the filter paper, that's the residue, and the salty water passes through, that's the filtrate.
Got it. Sand is separated. Now you just have salty water.
Perfect. So step three, evaporate the water from the filtrate. The water turns to steam and disappears,
Leaving the pure salt behind.
leaving the pure salt behind. So you see, we use dissolution, then filtration, then evaporation. A sequence.
That's a really clear example of combining methods. Very clever.
It demonstrates the power of using multiple properties.
And these kinds of combinations, they must be happening all around us in surprisingly complex
They
systems.
really are.
I mean, take something that seems simple, like making lemonade.
Okay.
You're obviously mixing things, water, lemon juice, sugar, that's creating the mixture. But often you might strain or filter it, right? To get rid of pulp or seeds.
Yes, that's filtration.
And the sugar disappearing into the water. That's dissolution. And, hypothetically, if you really, really wanted to get just the pure sugar back out of the lemonade.
You'd have to use evaporation. Exactly. Even simple things involve these principles.
Okay, or think about a much bigger challenge like recycling plastics. That seems incredibly complex.
Oh, it absolutely is a huge separation challenge because there are so many different types of plastic all mixed together.
So how do they even begin to sort that? It must need a combination of methods.
It absolutely does. Recycling plants use a whole sequence of sophisticated techniques. There might be some initial hand sorting by workers, maybe picking out plastics by color or obvious type.
Okay, like hand picking.
Then they often use machines that blow air, very much like winnowing, to separate lighter items like plastic bags and films from heavier things like bottles. That's based on density and shape.
Wow, air sorting.
And they also use huge Floetsink tanks filled with water or other liquids. Again, this uses density. Some types of plastic will float, others will sink, allowing them to be separated.
So density is key there too.
Very much so. It really highlights why you need that combination of techniques for such complicated mixtures. Because plastics vary so much in color, shape, density, melting point, you need multiple approaches to sort them effectively.
It really drives home the point.
Absolutely. And having a deep understanding of all these methods, how they work, how they combine, that's what allows us to process raw materials efficiently, purify substances to really exacting standards, and maintain rigorous quality control for countless products we just use every single day without a second thought.
Yeah.
Actually, before we wrap up, maybe it's worth quickly revisiting a couple of those common misconceptions we touched on earlier. Just make sure we leave things crystal clear.
Good idea. Let's do that. What was the first one again?
The idea that filtration removes all impurities from water.
Ah, yes, that's a really common belief, isn't it? Seems
Ah.
logical. So what's the catch?
The crucial correction, the nuance, is that filtration primarily removes insoluble solid particles, things that don't dissolve,
Okay.
but dissolved impurities, things like salts, minerals, certain chemicals, and even extremely tiny particles or microbes, they can often pass right through a simple filter.
So filtering tap water at home doesn't make it perfectly pure.
Not necessarily in a chemical sense, no. It might remove chlorine taste or some particles, but dissolved substances could still be there. That's why municipal drinking water goes through much more complex treatment than just basic filtration before it reaches your home.
Right. Okay, that's clear. And the other misconception.
That was the one about evaporation. Evaporation destroys the solute, the dissolved substance.
Yeah, I can see why people might think that the liquid goes, maybe the solid does too.
It seems intuitive, but the reality is critical. Evaporation separates the solvent, the liquid, from the solute, the solid. The solute absolutely remains behind. It isn't destroyed, and you can recover it, like we saw with the salt from seawater example.
Okay, so separation, not destruction.
Precisely. Understanding these subtle but really vital distinctions is key to truly getting the science of separation.
It really is. Wow, what a journey we've taken. We've navigated why separating mixtures is so crucial. We've solidified our understanding of what mixtures actually are. And we've delved into this amazing toolkit of ingenious techniques, all based on harnessing different physical properties. From the simple logic of handpicking and sieving, to the precision of filtration, the power of evaporation and condensation, the mechanics of churning, and all the way to these complex multi-step processes combined in several methods.
It's quite a range. And if we just connect this back to the bigger picture for a moment.
Sure.
Think about how many things around you right now that you probably take for granted.
Okay.
The air you're breathing, the pure water you hope you're drinking, the food you eat, the fuel in your car. Almost all of it has gone through some kind of separation process, often multiple processes.
That's true.
So maybe here's a final thought to leave with you. What other everyday items or processes, things you interact with constantly, might involve hidden separation techniques that you've just never consciously considered, simply because they're so fundamental, working away invisibly in the background?
That's a great question. Makes you look at the world a bit differently. So, next time you strain your pasta, or maybe see salt crystals forming after water evaporates, or even just sort your recycling, you'll know there's some elegant science of separation at work. And you'll understand just how profoundly it impacts our world. Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive.